You're listening to SIW Radio from SecurityInfoWatch.com, your everything resource for the security industry. Today is Monday, August 28, 2006. You're listening to SIW Radio from SecurityInfoWatch.com. I'm your host, Jeff Cole, editor here at the site. And we've got a really good program today. Coming up next is an interview with Michael Butler and Jason Halverson. Michael is the director of the Access Card Office for the Department of Defense. This is the office that handled the Common Access Card program for the Pentagon. And he's now a liaison on loan with the GSA, working for HSPD-12 implementation at other federal agencies. Jason Halverson joins us from Frost & Sullivan. Jason is a senior analyst over there in the smart card and surveillance industry, covering that market very closely. And both of these gentlemen joined us last Thursday on August 24th for a webinar on SecurityInfoWatch.com. You can find it from the link on our homepage titled Archived Webcasts. And these gentlemen came aboard this morning to answer some more questions that we were unable to reach during that webinar. So without further ado, I'm going to turn the tables over to Michael and then to Jason as we answer some of the questions that came in during last week's webinar.
Mike, Jason, one of the questions that came in said, as I understand it, the system is primarily focused on verifying identity and clearance of applicants in the issuance of that card. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could discuss the process that agencies are going to undertake in that card issuance and identity verification.
Well, to start with, there was the PIV1 process that had to start last October, which really said that, you know, all federal employees and their contractors have got to have at least what's called a national agency check with inquiries. Okay, and what had happened over the years is a lot of that hadn't, you know, it had just fallen into disuse. It's been a requirement since 1955. So we're going to take that information, which is really done in the personal security world, and then the person has to come in. They have to enroll in a face-to-face. You know, you have to physically show up with an enrollment officer. We're going to take fingerprints again, map it to that adjudication, and also, you know, some other identity documents that you have. And then all of that's going to be, like, packaged up. It's still in question what's going to happen to the fingerprints, but in time they're going to be sent to the FBI, and you're going to get an FBI check. Either, you know, let's just say that it's confusing in there right now. We're still working that out. And then all of that is going to be placed on the card, and the card's going to be mailed back to you about 48 hours after you leave the station.
And as far as the biometrics that go on there, is it solely limited to fingerprints, or can other biometrics be added to there, to this card?
They have a choice to add additional ones if they wish.
Okay. What are some of the, is anyone looking at other biometrics, or is it a little bit too early for that?
I think some people are looking at an iris scan, and some people maybe a little bit more in facial. But the issue is right now, once you put all the PIV stuff on there, the card's just about full. So, you know, that's probably going to be waiting for the next version of the card, 128K memory, which will be probably next year.
Okay. Which will obviously interface with all the systems, so we're not, you know, going to have troubles with legacy systems.
Yeah.
That kind of depends, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but each agency can then take it further if they choose to. So there's kind of minimum requirements that they can.
Yeah, the PIV requirements from NIST is really very minimal. There's very little stuff there. And so, you know, from the Department of Defense's viewpoint, you know, we've always wanted to see this do business stuff like, you know, purses and things like that too. But and probably the other big thing is, which DOD is going to do, is put all the ICAO stuff on there so it can be used as a, you know, kind of a passport, because the current military ID card is used that way for military guys. But, you know, we got to wait for the next size card to do all that stuff.
Jason, can you jump in here and tell us a little bit about the card technology and what to expect of the next generation of cards?
Well, I think the card technology, I believe, was really developed for specific needs in the PIV program, the cards that are the first generation, like Mike just mentioned. And from there, cards really are capable of a lot more memory. 64, I think, is where it is today. 128 or 256, they can go a lot higher. It's kind of a matter of the cost involved and the functionality you want. There's kind of a middle balance there.
As far as the cards, does it have to be 64, or can an agency go ahead and choose a 128?
How is that working, Mike? Do they give them some minimum, or is that kind of the standard that they rush to market?
Right now, the only one that you can really get, it's actually a 72K chip, but it has 64K of available memory.
Okay.
So that's the one. It's the same one that's in the Passport is going on the card, so it's all common technology. What you really have to kind of look for is there's some guys showing 128K cards, but none of them that I'm aware of have gone into the FIP certification process, which is the requirement. So they're probably this time next year off before we start to see something in production.
That they're approved and ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, the approval process is a good 9 months from once the guy actually has some test cards to work with.
Mike, this is probably a good question for you. One of our readers sent in and was asking whether the DoD cards are being issued from a central location or from multiple sites. And I'm guessing obviously the verification process begins at multiple sites. But as far as the card manufacturing and...
We do both.
Yeah.
So we have it's around 2,000 issuance stations that are local. And then we have a central card manufacturing facility in Monterey, California, and that only does military recruits. We're looking to grow that, but for right now, we've probably issued maybe 250,000 cards from that central machine in the last 18 months, somewhere in there.
Well, one question, the October 27th date has been called a deadline, it's been called a start date. No matter what the terminology is, it is a date that's pretty set in stone. What happens, Jason and Mike, to government agencies that do not or cannot comply with that deadline?
10 minutes, 15 minutes. Can you ask that again? I missed it.
Sure. What happens to a government agency that does not comply with the October 27th deadline?
But I've never been part of an agency that didn't comply. But I think what's going to happen is the way OMB does this is they put you on a report card and you just keep getting an A, B, C, D, E, or an F, and then it gets put up in the press and the agency leads get picked on until they get it fixed. So it's just that's the way traditionally they do it. There has been, at least in DoD, discussion that the Office of Management and Budget can actually come in and start messing around with the money that you're given every year if you don't comply. So there is a threat there, and people are obviously taking it seriously. We must have had 10 RFPs in the last 2 weeks.
Mike, how does that basically? Would it really? I think kind of to sum up what you just said, it really comes down to if they make some sort of an attempt, that's probably good enough initially, and then they have to obviously.
No, I would tell you, in my opinion, this is they are standing really firm on this. There's a lot of agencies who have tried to. Now, I'm going to say this very carefully, okay? I don't want everybody to get the wrong idea because I'm always getting beat up for this. But, there are agencies who really, small agencies of a couple of hundred people or even a couple thousand people where this is a really big task. And a lot of them don't have people who are technically qualified to really, they don't understand all the things of card technology. That's just a fact of life.
Sure.
So a lot of them are looking to find some easy ways out. I think there's probably contractors out there who have talked them into that. But, you know, there's going to be an audit here. People are going to be checked. And the expectation is that you did it and did it right. And you know, if you're just planning on doing something for October 27th to get you through the next month and get you through the checkoff, I would tell you that that's probably going to be worse than not doing anything at all.
Maybe you should.
They're being very tough with this.
But how can that? The question I have is, since it's been so hard for agencies really to have everything they need, product approved and things like that, and the standards kind of worked out earlier in the year, that there could be that much of a responsibility on their shoulders. Obviously, they need to try to meet it if all possible. But
Well, you know, my belief is, and I wouldn't have come over here to GSA if I didn't think it can't be done. And you know, there's five or six agencies who plan on being very, very close. That there are issues that are still spinning around out there, but this is not impossible to do.
Sure.
And I think, you know, what we've kind of lost, and a lot of people never got through this whole process. I mean, this is, it's not only for physical security and logical security. I mean, it's really to increase the security level for a lot of business requirements within the government. And you know, if we do things the way the government usually does things, this will go on for another 5 years. So I think they're pushing really hard. They want people to get started. Yes, it's difficult, but, you know, sooner or later, you've got to drink the Kool-Aid. And they want everybody to get in, get involved, and step out, you know, even if there are going to be some issues as we go through. But these systems are flexible enough. I mean, we're just going to have to adjust as we go.
Sure.
We talk about the process. I mean, there's a lot of emphasis on the agencies, but this is also affecting the government contractors, correct?
Yes.
And what kind of oversight is there for those contractors, and are you at the GSA working with them, or how is that operating?
Well, normally, I just give you an example of what happens in my own office at DOD. So if I have someone who comes in to work in my office and they have to get on the computer, right now they can't get on the computer until they have a common access card. And regardless, I mean, this this all worked well before PIV and HSPD ever happened. So their company has to come in. They have to start the background check, and the background check has to be done before I can give them a card. We've kind of been dealing that way for the last couple of years. The only thing is that now it's a little bit more prescribed, and what the requirement is, it means companies have to bring contractors on earlier in order to at least get, you know, an FBI fingerprint check and the things that we need to give them a credential. Does that make sense?
It does. How long of a delay would this add, do you think?
So,
a week?
So one
weeks?
Of the changes they made for... in order to make this a little bit more reasonable that they made last year was the bar for giving somebody a credential is a satisfactory FBI fingerprint check, okay, which can be done right now within a couple of hours if you're doing it electronically.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, probably, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 days, somewhere in there, within a week. The NACI, which is actually the requirement that they originally put in, can take sometimes up to 6 months to a year. We have the ability to give somebody the credential and go ahead and get them started just on the fingerprint check. That's the policy.
To segue into another question, and Jason, you may know this, but or Michael, when enrolling the new applicants, will the government be capturing all 10 fingers, or just, as I understand it, just the two whose templates will be stored on the card?
I can tell you that there's a paper sitting on my desk this morning, which is going to be policy that's going to come out from OMB hopefully this week. It's going to require at the enrollment stations to take both 10 rolled and 10 flat, and then you extract two of those fingerprints and put them on the card. So it'll be 10 print capture at the somewhere in the process, not necessarily at the enrollment machine, but somewhere in the process.
Interesting.
I got a question. Excuse me, Jeff.
Yeah.
Mike, I got a question on the enrollment for you. I kind of heard it different ways, but obviously the enrollment process is going to be probably hashed out further on down the line, but I'm guessing that's kind of a process by each agency. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I've also heard that there's talk of a kind of a centralized database to store some of this common information. Have you heard anything about that, or is it? And I've also heard that, you know, each agency, basically their databases will keep the information on their employees that are enrolled with them. And kind of the whole idea is if they ever want to go back and verify somebody still on the payroll or so on.
Almost all of the agencies within the government, they've already collapsed like all the HR systems into four what they call HR lines of business. So USDA, Department of Interior, DOD, GSA, and there's one other out there that, you know, they do the HR services for almost all of the agencies, those four. So what the intent with the card system is that we are going to take some data initially on people and we'll hold it centrally in the card system.
Yeah.
But once the connector is made up to the line of business, we're going to provide the information back to go into the HR system so that the card system is holding the minimum amount of data, really just enough to manage the card and the credential itself.
So there'll be like a bigger database.
Now the intent is really to like take not you know there is going to be obviously a database in the example of the GSA program, you know, for those people who sign up and the card management system does require a database to manage the cards. But the personal data on all of those people, we're going to be sending them back to the HR systems that own those people.
Yeah.
It's the same way that happens in DOD. So there's no plan on having one great big huge database in the sky to take care of all this.
Right, right.
It's really a federated type approach where, you know, we're trying to send everything back and so that the person who actually employs the person keeps their identity because they know it better than anybody else.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good point. If we go to a shared service model, how would a cardholder's data be sent to another agency beyond the cardholder's home agency, if you will?
For what purpose?
Perhaps employees on loan between different agencies.
Okay, so let's see if I get this right. So there is a requirement. It's not a requirement, but there has been a set of interfaces that are going to be formally put out probably this week, which allow somebody to go and check somebody's identity using their credential. So, you know, it'll say, Mike Butler's in the Department of Defense. I show up in front of a guard down here at GSA. He'll use my credential. It'll go back to, it'll go back to the HR system, and it'll bring down my, you know, the fact that my credential's still good and maybe other information. So that interface is called back-end authentication. So that's the way we look at doing it business-wise, and also if people move around. You know, I'm here at GSA, but I'm still carrying my DOD CAC card. I refuse to get a GSA card since I'm here. So, the idea is they should be using my DOD card to check and find out who I am.
So it sounds like, and that was another question that came in from, I think from the Bureau of Reclamation, was asking, you know, how the enrollment system worked with the HR systems, and that would be directly, is that right?
Within DOD, there's a whole bunch of HR systems because there's really about 35 different entities within the Department of Defense, but all of that is stored in a data warehouse called DEERS, the Defense Eligibility and Enrollment System. Our card management system interfaces with DEERS, so if you have a question about somebody's identity, and this works in DOD today, and we even use it for people to get, you know, draw their prescriptions and stuff from the pharmacy and stuff like that. you know, you can use your credential. It goes back to DEERS, and it says, which is the HR data warehouse, and it says Mike Butler is a retired guy in the Navy, and he gets, you know, free aspirin from the doctor. So, so the intent is going back to those HR systems, possibly with a link through the card management system, but it kind of depends on what business you're doing.
So this is Jason, Mike. It sounds like those HR databases are going to be accessed a lot in the system. Because I guess, like I'm trying to imagine the process, and I was supposing that the card management system would verify if a credential is active. Somebody retires, then the HR sends something to the card management saying, hey, don't accept this card anymore.
Well, Jason, I'm glad you said that. There's actually two pieces here. So first of all, because the cards have PKI certificates on them, you can always go and hit PKI and check the certificate revocation list, and you're going to get a negative check, which is this card has not been revoked yet, right? So that's one means of authentication. The second one is the one I've been kind of talking about because it's my favorite, which is more of a positive check, which is Mike Butler is still in the database and his boss, Mary Dixon, didn't fire him yesterday. Okay?
Yep.
So, and once that check happens, in DOD, what we do, this data warehouse is every couple of hours, we take a snapshot of it and we put it out for our customers to use for these types of services. So, I mean, it does 40 million of these transactions a month. You know, it's like a lot of transactions, you're right. But it all happens behind the scenes and it seems to work.
Right. But ultimately the HR database is regularly updating the card management system and saying that this person is current or not current, correct?
Well, you know, really the HR system's requirement is going to be if there's a change of status, it needs to send it to the card management system.
Gotcha.
You know, we're not going to be like hitting it all the time for these types of things.
Right.
But if within DOD, if somebody ends up getting you know, if they get fired, if they get suspended, if something happens that would impact their credential, DEERS does send a message to the CMS saying do something with the card, which then also sends a message to the PKI provider that says, you know, suspend the certificates.
Right. Gotcha.
Okay. Mike, another question for you, and this one comes from the Military Surface Deployment and Distribution Command. Their question was, at what point, if any, would the CAC card be merged in with the TWIC card?
I would answer this way. The TWIC card originally was not, was more of a physical access-based card. I think now, at least from what I've been reading in the press, it's signed up to become an HSPD-12 compliant card. So I see that the TWIC card becoming more like these HSPD cards, which, you know, the CAC is going to be one. So I'm encouraged because it seems like everybody is drinking this HSPD-12 Kool-Aid, you know. And all the different credential systems within the federal government seem to be moving that way and changing their base requirements. I think it's a good thing. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that does. So they'll basically kind of be moving to a Generation 2 card that'll be HSPD-12.
Yeah, from everything I've seen in the press and from the TWIC folks at, you know, being talked to in Congress and things like that, you know, this all seems to just be naturally converging towards at least these base set of standard data elements and standard requirements. I think it's a good deal.
Absolutely. Jason, let me throw you a question.
Sure.
Since we've been throwing Mike a lot of questions. What's your take on how this is going to affect private sector implementations?
Well, I think what I see happening is two things, and the first part is really kind of a expansion on the last subject we just talked about. I see the PIV card becoming the standard for just like Mike just said, TWIC, first responder cards, which is local government level, state government ID cards, expanding out into kind of the additional government sectors in state and local, and at the same time expanding in the private sector, starting with the contractors that are already mandated to get in the program, and really from there. And I think some of these companies initially are just focused really on the employees that are interfacing with the government, or more so in the past interfacing with the government versus all of their employees. And I think they'll start just doing a card management system for all of their employees, and that just continuing to expand. I kind of got into that a little bit in my presentation. In addition to that, there's some optional features that are being desired probably in that next generation card, like digital signature and things that relate to correspondence like email. So if companies are regularly working with the government, there's a huge motivation for them to be compatible, not just for kind of mandated reasons, but just to communicate closely with one of their big customers, the government. And really in the private sector, I think that HSPD 12 card, or what I like to call the PIV card, is going to be the standard nationwide, because it really, that's what it was designed to do, was to set a standardization and provide functionality and ID that can then also be used in things like the access control and so on. And that's kind of really what's already going on with the private sector, is they're starting to go that way. And I think once it gets rolled out in the government and people get more comfortable with the whole idea, that it'll rapidly be implemented in the private sector.
I want to wrap up this morning's chat with a final question for you, Mike, and I wonder if you could just briefly walk us through some of the steps that one of the agencies that you're working with is going through to make this process happen, and is it can be used as kind of a miniature case study, if you will, for other agencies that are in the middle of this project.
So I'm not going to name the one, but this is one who's really going to be on their own, starting out in the process. Okay. So what they've done over the last year is they've really, laid out and automated this process of getting the identity checks for people, getting the FBI fingerprint data back, getting all of the data on a person, the rules and requirements for what documents they bring in, and the business and data flow for all the data. So they've spent a year doing that, and it's a fairly large agency, around 120,000 people. About, a month ago, they put out an RFP to take all of, because now they understood the data flow, they understood the business requirements they had, and they had practiced a little bit with some physical security stuff and the logical access. But then what they did not have is a card management system or a PKI provider. So they did an RFP and went out and got that. So they've got to get that integrated over the next 2 months, okay, which is aggressive, with the intent of issuing their first card, right there at the last week of October. So, and then at that point, most of them, the word that has been said to everybody is you can't issue one card and then go back to sleep again. So my boss has said there has to be an exponential rise in cards so that we can actually say that we're meeting the presidential mandate within DOD. Most of them understand that. And then, once the card issuing process gets well underway, which is, and becomes routine, which is, if you're standing up a new system like this, that takes months, 6 months before you start to get comfortable with it. And then what a lot of them are doing is they're because there's no requirement to do this under HSPD 12. HSPD 12 says you got to do the credential, right? But then a lot of the agencies are paying the money to have card readers put on their computers, and some of them have started the budgets for replacing at least the high value physical security systems in their major big buildings or places that might be at risk. So, that's kind of the case study for it. The only thing that's The only thing that some of them are trying to do is, because many of them have HID systems out there, some of them are going to issue two cards for a while until they can get critical mass on the PIV cards. Some of them are asking to be able to put HID antennas into these cards with the 14443, so we have a tri-technology card. So, but all of those are, I think, moving the business processes that, physical security installations and logical access installations on computers, that's going to go on for the next 5 to 10 years in the government. That's how long it's going to take.
This is kind of the Y2K for government IT contractors, if you will.
Yeah, very much so, except this one's really got a lot of work to it, Less audit. I mean, you actually got to, install stuff and you got to make stuff work, right? So it's I had some insight into the Y2K thing. There was a lot of auditing, but how much work was, everybody's got to do work in this one.
Yeah, a lot of time looking in databases in Y2K and a lot of time actually doing work in them.
Yeah,
meantime.
Yeah.
Great. Well, Jason, Mike, thank you very much for joining us this Monday morning. So, and thank you again for participating in the webinar.
Sure. I want to tell you, that was one of the best ones, and I was absolutely stunned. It's the first time I've ever seen like 5 or 6 people get up and talk and all talk on the same story. I mean, I've been waiting for this for years. So it was really exciting for me. And not only that, I had some folks here who stayed and watched the whole thing. It was really excellent. Everybody did a great job.
That was Michael Butler of the DoD and Jason Halverson of Frost & Sullivan sharing some very good words of advice for folks who are preparing for HSPD-12 implementation. Of course, we've said all along, and I think you heard Jason and Michael say as well, this is really going to shape corporate America. I think mainly starting with the government contractors and moving into other aspects of their business, their non-government business. And I think we're really going to see a lot of this trickle down to the municipal level, with maybe large metropolitan cities and with state governments. And before you know it, I would not be surprised if this is down right down to the access control system, the new access control system going in at your corporate facility. So that wraps it up for this episode of SIW Radio. We hope you'll join us back next time for more great news and information here with SecurityInfoWatch.com.